Welcome to part two of the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Historic Walking Tour. Part two focuses on Laurelhurst Park and some noteworthy homes bordering the park. We start at the Laurelhurst Club, located at 3721 Southeast Ankeny Street. Start the audio tour once you are there. The Laurelhurst Club was built in 1912 and was one of the first country clubs in Portland. Laurelhurst developer and resident Paul Murphy felt there was a need for a neighborhood community center. To get the club started, 32 neighbors donated $100 each, and it quickly became a club that anyone in Oregon had to belong to. The club was a hub of activities, including sponsored tennis matches on tennis courts, which do not exist today, concerts, and parties. The club also served as a voting and election house. 40,000 people attended a band concert in the summer of 1916, hosted by the club. By 1917, there was a wait list for membership. Also in 1917, the club was gifted an American flag by the Tuesday Afternoon Card Club. More than 250 club members were present for its first raising as the Laurelhurst Drill Team presented. Between 1916 and 1920, the club had its own orchestra of 20 to 30 musicians known as Laurelhurst Symphonic Orchestra, comprised of club members. The club even had its own publication called Laurelhurst Club Life, edited by Clifford Harrison. Membership grew from 206 to 490 members within a year. During World War II, a group called the Women of Laurelhurst used the club for rolling and packaging bandages for boys overseas. Today, the Laurelhurst Club hosts monthly ballroom dances for its members, seasonal community sing-alongs, and other community events. The space is also available for rent for weddings, meetings, or other celebrations. Next, we'll go see one of the homes of the creators of the Laurelhurst neighborhood. As you are facing the Laurelhurst Club, walk to your left, down Ankeny, away from Cesar Chavez, and make the first right on Laurelhurst Place. Walk up the hill, stop at the corner of Southeast Laurelhurst Place and Burnside, making sure not to cross Burnside. Cross left across Laurelhurst Place and stop at the first house at 3574 East Burnside. Pause the audio until you reach the house. Built in 1917 by Ellis F. Lawrence, this is the former home of real estate developer Paul Cole Murphy. Murphy was one of the most successful and influential real estate entrepreneurs in Portland. Murphy was the president of the Ladd Estate Company, which was established in 1908 to manage the real estate holdings of the Ladd family. Including in those holdings was Hazelfern Farm, considered one of the finest stock farms of the West. Hazelfern Farm is the original land now occupied by this neighborhood. In 1909, Murphy and his fellow investors acquired Hazelfern Farm from the Ladd Estate for $2 million and organized the Laurelhurst Company. The goal was to develop the landing into one of the most fashionable residential sections of the city. Laurelhurst was advertised as a high-class residence park that prohibited apartments, hotels, and commercial buildings. Murphy was vice president and sales agent for the Laurelhurst Company. As you face the Paul Murphy House, continue to your right, walking down Burnside. Turn left on the next street, Floral Place, and walk down the short hill until you have reached the large home on Ankeny at the end of Southeast Floral Place. Cross over to the park side of the street, so you are directly in front of a large brick home next to the park, known as the Albee House, at 3360 Ankeny Street. Pause the audio until you are in front of this home. This beautiful colonial revival home was built in 1912 by Portland architect Albert E. Doyle. Doyle designed many of Portland's downtown landmarks, including the Multnomah County Central Library, the Meyer and Frank Building, the U.S. National Bank Building, the Benson Hotel, and Portland's iconic public drinking fountains known as Benson Bubblers. He also designed Reed College and the Lodge at Multnomah Falls. The home was built for Harry Russell Alby, Portland's mayor from 1913 to 1917. Alby was born in 1867 and first entered politics in 1903 when he won a seat on the city council. He ran for mayor a year later but lost to Harry Lane. Instead, he turned to state politics and was elected to the Oregon State Senate in 1910 and served until 1913. He left state politics in 1913 to run for mayor again, this time winning. Alby's administration was active in several progressive efforts. First, he developed the city's public docks with the acquisition of Swan Island and Mox Bottom on the Willamette River. He was also instrumental in selecting a site, developing plans, and constructing the Civic Auditorium, which was completed in 1917. Most importantly, he strongly supported measures to implement a park expansion across the city. So it's fitting that his house sits on the edge of one of the city's most beautiful parks. He did not seek re-election in 1917, returning full-time to his insurance business. In 1939, after his retirement from business, Alby returned to public service when the city council invited him to accept the temporary post of advisor and assistant to the superintendent of parks, a position that was established in connection with a new park development program. The position was made permanent in 1940, and Alby was given the title of Supervisor of Land Acquisition and Development for the Bureau of Parks. He continued in that position until his death at age 83, December 31st, 1950. This historic home operated as a bed and breakfast recently, but now is back to a private residence. Turn around to view the home across the street on the left corner at 21 Southeast Floral Street. Across the street from the Alby Mansion, we find a home originally built for James Tamasy and his wife Ruth in 1916. The original purchase price of this house was around $8,000. J.P. Tamasy was a member of the first graduating class of the University of Oregon's Medical Department in 1890. In 1895, before taking up residence in Portland, J.P. Tamasy created the Oregon Condensed Milk Company in Hillsboro. This dairy was responsible for producing Oregon's first can of condensed milk. The business was later purchased by Pacific Coast Condensed Milk Company in 1902 and later became what we recognize today as Carnation Milk Company. From 1955 to 1999, the home was owned by the Sisters of Social Service. The Sisters of Social Service is a branch of the Roman Catholic Church based out of Los Angeles, California. Originally organized in 1908 in Hungary, their mission is to address social concern throughout the world. Their website states, "We Sisters of Social Service are women of many cultures who come together to fulfill the gospel call to care for the poor and alienated. The right of all people to live in dignity is at the heart of our work and of our religious faith." During the 44 years that the sisters resided at 21 Southeast Floral Place, the house was converted from a single-family home to that which could accommodate 13 to 15 women. Bedrooms were divided and halls were added so that the sisters could have individual private rooms. In 1999, the home was sold to a private owner and converted back to a single-family home. The additional room partitions were removed and the home was returned to its original configuration. We will now walk down Ankeny to talk about the house directly next door to the Albee House. Pause the audio until you are in front of the home at 3316 Southeast Ankeny Street. Next door to the Albee House is the Bitar Mansion. It's also known as the Harry A. and Ada Green House. The 12,000 square foot home was designed by architect Herman Brookman and built in 1927 for $410,000, equivalent to $5.91 million today. It boasts 17 rooms, including a marble-floored grand ballroom. The interior also features a heated pool, servants' wing, and elaborate woodwork, tile, metalwork, and sculptures. The architect, Herman Brookman, also designed Congregation Beth Israel and Frank Manor House at Lewis and Clark College, which is listed on the National Registry of Historic Places. Robert and Mabel Bitar purchased the house in 1951 and lived here for almost 50 years. Robert later became an honorary consul to Lebanon and lived in the mansion until his death in 2000. Continue down Ankeny to Southeast 33rd Avenue, walking all the way around the Bitar Mansion. We will now enter the park. Just after you pass the Bitar Mansion, you'll see a paved path entrance on your left to the park. Pause the audio here until you get to the park entrance. Welcome to Laurelhurst Park, one of the jewels of the Portland park system. This 31-acre space became the first city park on the National Register of Historic Places in 2001. But in the mid-1800s, what is now the park was part of the great forested landscape that covered the Portland area. Some of those original fir trees still live in the park, a reminder of what used to be. In 1898, the secretary of Portland's newly formed Park Association began correspondence with Olmsted Brothers, a firm founded by Frederick Law Olmsted, the nation's most influential landscape architect and urban planner. The firm was the first of several such firms to flourish around the turn of the 20th century as a result of the City Beautiful movement, which sought to bring beauty into cities as a reaction to decades of industrialization and poor planning. The Olmsted Plan for the city was presented in 1903 by John C. Olmsted, stepson and nephew of Frederick Law Olmsted. John Olmsted's plan for a park system in Portland identified locations for 37 park projects encompassed within a proposed system of neighborhood parks, suburban parks, scenic reservations, city squares, parkways, and boulevards, and included among its recommendations the purchasing of a swampy, forested corner of William S. Ladd's dairy farm. At the time, the city was focused on the upcoming Lewis and Clark exhibition, to be held in 1905. The extraordinary rise in land values due to the exhibition prevented the park board from realizing Olmsted's plan for the Ladd Farm or for any of the other 36 proposed park sites. It wasn't until October of 1909, under the direction of Superintendent Emmanuel D. Nisch, that the Portland Park Board purchased the section of land that would become Laurelhurst Park from the Laurelhurst Company for $92,482.10. You're entering the park in the section called Rhododendron Hill. Continue along the path until you reach a long set of stairs that cross the paved path on both sides. Stop when you get to the stairs. As you walk, We'll talk about this section of the park. If you reach the stairs, stop there. This hill contains what park designer Emmanuel T. Miche described as the steeper areas of the park, which were to be devoted to arboreous and shrubby vegetation as an appropriate use of the ground and to add an enriching element and one lessening to the cost of maintenance. Miche planted the area profusely with rhododendrons, azaleas, western hemlock, and magnolias. The rhododendrons that lend the hill its name are concentrated in the center of the incline around a string of straight-run brick stairs that runs from the base of the hill to Ankeny Street. Pause the audio until you reach the set of stairs. Although the original log stairs have been replaced with brick, the enormous rhododendrons surrounding them are the original plantings. Subsequent plantings on the densely wooded slope include deodar cedar, border forsythia, tanyoshi pine, paper bark maple, paper birch, paper bark cherry, empress tree, red bud, devil's walking stick, harlequin glory bower, ground fir, golden chain tree, incense cedar, and red flowering currant. Continue following the path to the comfort station bathrooms. We'll talk about the history of the park as we walk there. Miche was heavily influenced by the Olmsted technique of dividing neighborhood parks into sections for different types of uses. This was directly reflected in his plan for Laurelhurst Park. As originally designed, there were six major sections of land within the park: Concert Grove, Firwood Lake and the Children's Lawn, Plateau Meadow, Broad Meadow, Picnic Grove, and Rhododendron Hill. The park annex across Oak Street was added later. Miche designed Laurelhurst Park to allow for different types of use within each section. The sections each have their own distinct character and are separated from each other by the original concrete footpath system that circulates throughout the park. Although Miche designed Laurelhurst Park in 1910, little more than debris clearing happened at the site that year because of funding shortages. Construction began in earnest in 1912 with the grading of walkways, the grading and seeding of lawns, and the installation of log steps. Like the rest of Laurelhurst, minimal grading was done to create the park, instead building the park around the natural contours of the land. Financial constraints stalled plans for planting and quashed the construction of a gazebo for the Concert Grove and the installation of the brook and pool system. That year also brought a challenge to one of Miche's principal design elements. Feeling pressure from local agitation for a playground in the park, likely from prospective and existing owners in the developing Laurelhurst subdivision, the park board insisted that plans be studied for the substitution of the proposed Firwood Lake with a recreation area. The site would include a swimming pool, assembly building, lockers, gymnasium, and an outdoor playground. Construction did not resume at Laurelhurst Park for three more years. You should now be in front of the comfort station bathrooms. If not, pause the audio here. In 1914, Portland architects Whitehouse and Fulio designed a men's comfort station for Laurelhurst Park. The building faces Ankeny Street, marking one of the park's main entrances, and currently holds restrooms and the park's administrative office. It was designed as a simple version of the English cottage style popular at the time, as can be seen in houses all over Laurelhurst. The following year, the park's paths and sidewalks lit with electric lights. With your back to the street and comfort station, take the path in front of you to the left, towards the lake and stop when you are on the banks of the lake. Mish utilized an existing spring-fed pond at the east side of the site as a principal design element. Mish called for the enlargement and deepening of the pond to create Burwood Lake, which was designed to feed a brook system that emptied out of the lake from its north shore, meandering west to the far end of the park. Mish envisioned intermittent dams creating pools and miniature cascades at several locations along the stream. Picturesque bridges would carry paved walkways over the brook. The brook system never materialized. Originally known by locals as Ladd's Pond, Burwood Lake, as it would come to be known, was not much more than puddle, with the odd clusters of cattails, frequented by cattle for a drink and schoolboys for a swim. Mish transformed the pond by deepening it and manicuring the grounds around it. Boomerang Island was added in 1955. Continue clockwise around the lake. If you have your back to the lake, turn right. The dirt path will eventually lead back to the paved path. We will keep talking about the lake as we walk. In the early years, around 1918, the pond was patrolled by a white swan named General Pershing, who was said to keep little children from approaching too close to the water. The Park Bureau even went so far as to open a matrimonial bureau in 1919 to help find Pershing a mate. In later years, a black-beaked, black-toed swan named Big Boy took over. For a time in the 1920s and 30s, the Rose Festival Queen's coronation took place in the pond on floating boats and decorated rafts, drawing thousands of onlookers. People used to ice skate on the pond in the winter as recently as 1989. By 1990, nearly 20,000 catfish, carp, and black crappie fish were stirring up sediment on the lake's bottom. Oregon Bass and Panfish Club tried to deplete the population. Eventually, the sediment built and increased levels of dangerous algae compromised the lake's health and appearance. Sunshine was unable to reach the bottom of the lake, which is needed to keep algae down. To bring the lake back to health, the Portland Parks and Recreation Department drained and dredged the lake in 2010 and installed an oxygen circulating system. Today, thousands of fish still inhabit the lake, along with ducks and turtles. Plantings around the lake are a mix of deciduous and coniferous trees, and mature shrubbery planted in clusters include common hackberry, silk tree, sweet gum, fragrant snowbell, bald cypress, and Chinese witch hazel. Bigleaf maple, sugarberry, and northern red oak are among those plantings that remain from 1913 to 1914. Continue on the paved path until it makes a T just after the water fountain. When you reach the T, turn right on the paved path and continue straight up the hill. We will talk a little bit about Emmanuel Mish as we walk. Emmanuel Mish brought a remarkable range of experience and skill to the Portland Park Board. Born in Syracuse, New York, he attended the Missouri Botanic School before enrolling in the Busey Institute, the horticultural school of the Arnold Arboretum in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts, in 1894. Receiving a scholarship in 1896 to attend the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew, England, and going to work for Olmsted Brothers in 1898. During his 8 years with Olmsted Brothers, Mish absorbed the philosophies that inspired the work of the Olmsted family, the social responsibility the Olmsteds felt to create restorative landscapes for all classes of people, the creation of designs that resembled the result of natural weathering and biological processes on the land, the use of design techniques that created either a pastoral scene characterized by gentle rolling meadows, scattered shade trees, and still bodies of water, or a picturesque scene evoked by lush foliage, rugged terrain, and circuitous paths and streams. The use of circulation systems such as walks and drives so visitors could enjoy the landscape without destroying it. The belief that all buildings and sanctuary in the park remain secondary to the landscape design. And finally, the importance of the benefits of the human soul of total immersion in scenery. On your right is Plateau Meadow. Continue the audio until you reach the horseshoe pits and water fountain. This section of the park contains many of the original old Douglas firs that Niche called the trees, the crowning glory of the park, considering them the central design element of Laurelhurst Park. His decision to minimize grading at the park was a result of his respect for the trees and his desire to maintain the grandeur of their appearance. Many of these original trees still stand, although some of the old firs have died of natural causes over the years and been replaced in kind. Later additions, evergreens and exotics, have contributed to the stunning display of variety at Plateau Meadow. These include dawn redwood, a rare deciduous conifer, giant redwood, Port Orford cedar, northern red oak, tulip tree, Japanese crabapple, Pacific dogwood, southern magnolia, Whitcomb flowering cherry, and katsura tree. The park overall contains 120 species of trees, comprising nearly 1,000 individual trees, 10% of which predate the park, and 30% of which are from the park's original plantings, with new trees being planted yearly. As you stand at the corner of the horseshoe pits, you are in sight of heritage tree number 160, located just off the right side of the back fence of the horseshoe pits, about 20 yards from the path. Pause here to locate the tree. It will be marked with a plaque. There are over 300 heritage trees throughout Portland, and 8 in Laurelhurst. These are trees formally recognized by the City Council for their unique size, age, historical, and horticultural significance. The City Council designates a small plaque for the tree. Heritage tree number 160 is a katsura tree, Latin name Cercidiphyllum japonicum, native to northern China and Japan. It stands about 70 feet tall, with a spread of about 61 feet and trunk circumference of 10.2 feet. It has fall color and blossoms in the spring. Katsura trees became popular in the late 1950s with a growing post-war interest in Japanese culture. Rejoin the paved path at the horseshoe pits and resume audio there. A real estate inventory listing the park and playground features installed between 1925 and 1932 notes the installation of horseshoe courts in 1926, a point confirmed in the 1927 annual report, which listed 6 courts. Although it is unclear whether the horseshoe courts were located at the annex or at the main park, the 6 courts were likely the first of 12 that currently stand in Plateau Meadow. Continue to the end of the horseshoe pits and turn left across Oak Street to enter the park annex. Pause the audio until you are in front of the Laurelhurst Dance Studio. In 1919, the Pacific Coast Parks Association honored Niche by voting Laurelhurst the most beautiful park in the West. Between 1921 and 1922, Niche's successor, Charles Paul Kaiser, purchased an entire block across Oak Street from Laurelhurst Park to serve as a playground. This strategic acquisition took the pressure off further development at the main park and was a key factor in the retention of the park's design integrity over time. Kaiser oversaw the development of the playground throughout the 1920s, installing tennis courts, handball courts, play equipment, a wading pool, a recreation building, and a kitchenette. At the park annex, the boys were to play on the south side, the girls on the north side, with general games held in the middle. The Tudor theater-style building in the annex has a unique chimney that splits in two on the balcony level with a spot to stand in the middle. Although the fireplace is no longer in use, the picturesque balcony is still available for observing class. With the installation of a professional-grade dance floor, the studio has primarily been used for performing arts classes. Feel free to pause the audio here to look around the park annex. When done at the annex, head back to Oak Street and turn left, walking down Oak and crossing 37th Street. Stop at the corner of 37th and Oak. We will re-enter the park in a bit, but let's first walk down Oak Street. Pause audio until you reach there. On the first corner of Southeast Oak and Southeast 37th Street, and the next corner at Southeast Oak and Southeast 35th Street, we find houses once owned by the Franz brothers, Engelbert and Joe, of Franz Bakery. The Franz brothers immigrated to the United States in 1896 to work at their uncle's bakery. In 1906, they saved enough money to buy the bakery from their uncle and grow it into a thriving business. As you will see, the two homes bookend the block with their similar styles and share a similar roof. Continue down Oak Street to 35th Street and notice the second Franz home on that corner. Once you reach this home on 35th Street, cross back to the park side at 35th Street and re-enter the park. Pause audio until you reach the park entrance again at 35th and Oak. As you re-enter the park, head straight ahead on the paved path. Do not go left or right, but stay straight. As you look to your left, this section of the park is called Picnic Grove. Picnic Grove is utilized, as originally intended by Miesch, as a gathering place for large groups. The area displays long strips of picnic tables on concrete pads at its flat west end. Miesch did a great deal of planting in this area to augment the Douglas fir, western yew, and black walnut that he found there in 1913. European beech, sugar maple, Norway maple, big leaf maple, coast redwood, giant sequoia, common persimmon, holly, sycamore, and umbrella pine comprise Miesch's selections for Picnic Grove. According to the park's planting inventory, this original vegetation is still in existence. As you look to your right, on the opposite side of the path from Picnic Grove, is the section of the park called Broad Meadow. Broad Meadow represents Emanuel Miesch's vision to create distinct sections of the park for vigorous activities. The flatter areas are to be open to games, picnicking, rambling, and fiestas. Consequently, Miesch planted very little at Broad Meadow, which consists of a wide expanse of cultivated lawn with a level, treeless center surrounded by gentle slopes with dense and varied tree clusters. Broad Meadow is home to the dog park, as well as the summer movies in the park program. Looking towards Rhododendron Hill to the left, you'll see at the base of the hill is a shallow lawn-covered ravine. This ravine was to have been the site of a brook and pool system originating from Firwood Lake. Miesch deliberately planned the brook system for that area, knowing the area was swampy. A lack of funds canceled construction of the brook, and now the ravine holds standing water through much of the winter and spring. Continue along the path until the paved path forks. Stop at this fork where you'll see a large sculpture. This small triangular bit of grass is known as the children's lawn. Within the children's lawn sits a sculpture titled Triad. Originally completed in 1980 and remade in 2003, Triad was designed by Evelyn Franz, who received her Master of Fine Arts in Sculpture in 1976 from Portland State University. Take the left path at the fork to head back to the comfort station. Pause audio here until you reach the comfort station. Go straight past the comfort station and continue on the paved path up the hill on the right side of the comfort station. This section of the park is called the Concert Grove. The grove is a gently sloping tract of cultivated lawn that covers the northeast portion of the park. Niche intended to build a music gazebo in the center of the grove, but money shortages canceled the plan. Nevertheless, the grove has historically been the location of musical and theatrical performances, attracting large crowds to the expansive area. Since Mish envisioned a space that would accommodate such crowds, he planned a spare planting program for the Concert Grove. The annual report to the Park Bureau in 1915 noted that because of its central location, the patronage of the park was enormous, and that one local band concert drew 32,000 people, the largest crowd ever assembled in a Portland park for a single band. Follow the path straight and out to the street corner. Exit the Concert Grove and Laurelhurst Park at the corner of Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard and Southeast Ankeny. Turn sharp left on Ankeny back to the Laurelhurst Club. This concludes part two of this Laurelhurst neighborhood walking tour. The author of this tour is Amelia Shields, a Grant High School student, class of 2020, and a Girl Scout. Amelia created this historic walking tour for her Girl Scout Gold Award project, as she was interested in learning more about the history of the neighborhood and wanted other members of the community to be able to experience the rich history of the neighborhood and feel connected to it. For feedback, questions, or information about the source material, email laurelhurstwalkingtour@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this tour, please mention it on social media with the hashtag #LaurelhurstWalkingTour. This tour is available in both print and audio formats on the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association website.